What's going on, everybody? Before we begin today's show, I just wanted to let you know we were experiencing some technical difficulties when we recorded the other night. I'm sure we'll be back to the regular setup next week, but for now, let's just get started. What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Hoops Corner. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, the Iceman himself, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Doing great. The Raptors lost a heartbreaker last night, so I'm feeling great right now.
Oh, man, we're going to get into some strange Raptors talk, to say the least. A banger in the paint, Rajan Walia, how you feeling?
You know what? I'm feeling quite sad, Peter. It's been almost a full year since I last touched a basketball on a real court.
Yeah, dude, it's exactly a year for me. Last February, I was in Ottawa hooping with you guys at Richcraft, and then at that other spot on Cambrian.
Yeah, I know, it's like the first true love, and then you can't give back to it. You know, Valentine's Day's passed, and
we didn't even get All-Star break this year. No All-Star break at Valentine's Day. That's a real strange one, man.
Yeah, exactly.
When's the time this happened?
And we're not going to be able to get together for the All-Star game too, and the All-Star festivities, which is all going to be in one night now. Man, what a year.
Yo, you know what? I didn't believe you guys when you told me that they were planning to do it all in one day. But it's come out. It said everything on one day, the three-point contest and the dunk contest prior to the All-Star game. This is going to be, let's just say it's going to be a hectic one day, so they say. I don't know. I don't trust it. But
prior and at halftime. So basically these guys are like, you know, people that travel all the time for going to different festivals and such, right? They're basically like a clown show. They show up for the halftime show for 15 minutes. They do their dunks, and then the NBA tells them, get the hell out. Go back to your city. You see the protocols that came out today? It basically says that. It's like you have to show up for your 15 minutes of fame, and then you don't even get to go shower. You just get on the plane and get the hell back to your market.
No way it's that strict.
That's what it seemed like based on what I read this morning, so...
Wow, that's incredible.
You're not supposed to stay in the same arena. You're not supposed to even stay for the festivities. You're just supposed to get the hell out.
So they're going to fly them in just for like 4 hours and then leave?
It's a road show.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Even the Globetrotters get more respect than that.
Yeah, the freaks in the circus.
Bro, I don't believe that, man. That's crazy talk. I don't know. All right, well, I guess we can just move on because, like, who cares about the All-Star game, realistically? This is going to be a clown show the whole time, like you were saying. But we got to move on. A lot of Raptors talk, guys. Josh, you talked about the Raptors tanking away a game against the Timberwolves, in which what you described as the last minute or 30 seconds, however long it was, of just no one trying to win this game whatsoever. Just, you know, turnover after turnover, missed layups by Pascal, and just ugly, ugly, ugly basketball. And then you get to the next day and boom. Shams comes out and says, the Raptors and Cavaliers are in trade talks for one Andre Drummond that we talked about last week. And then the best part about it is, like, 2 minutes later, Woj comes out and says, no, there's nothing imminent here. Let's just slow down, guys. There's a lot of teams talking about Andre Drummond. So, I don't know. Let's start with the hometown discussion here. How do the Raptors get Andre Drummond? Do we actually want Andre Drummond in a Raptors uniform? And how many double doubles would Andre Drummond get going out for the rest of the year? Because Andre Drummond's about to get a lot of DNPs sitting in Cleveland right now.
Yeah, I'm gonna like quickly say my 2 cents because I know Josh is gonna go on his whole tirade. But I think Andre Drummond fits a need in the Raptors. I think that they need a center, but he's not the future for the Raptors. He's not going to be a piece that they build around or build with. I think he kind of fits a short-term need. He gives them a better presence inside than their woeful experience with Aaron Baines and Alex Len. And I personally think that Drummond coming to the Raptors is an okay move, considering that I don't think the Raptors have to give all that much to get him. He was traded for pennies. That's how Cleveland got him. I think the Raptors can do the same. And you know what? He's an upgrade over Aaron Baines. So I don't consider this a positive move or a negative move. It's more of like a net neutral move.
Yeah, I think he'll make the Raptors better. I've said it before, like, I've always liked Andre Drummond overall because he has a lot of talent. It's just he's never been able to really reach even like 50% of his talent, I don't think.
No. Don't, I'm not letting you get away with this. You shit on Andre Drummond every chance that you get.
I crap on him because I care.
Right?
I mean, sure, whatever you say, Josh.
I really liked him out of college. Like, I'm going to say that. He had a ton of talent. He could basically do everything on the floor besides shoot three-pointers. He's super agile. He's really quick for his size. He rebounds the hell out of the ball. It's just he's not as good at the things he should be doing as he should be, right? He should be a defensive player of the year candidate every year. Like, he's more mobile than Rudy Gobert, right? And I think he's smart enough to pull it off. It's just no coach has really gotten that out of him. I'm not sure if that's even possible, honestly. But he'd be going to an organization if this ever happened where, you know, you have stability from the top down. You have ownership that will support the move. And you have a coach that's really going to push him and will bench him if he's not playing well. Like, we've seen it with Nick Nurse plenty of times with everyone. That if you're not playing hard, you're not playing defense especially, he's just going to sit you. And plus, you got Boucher behind him, who's played really well this year. So if Drummond's not performing, you just play Boucher 30 minutes a game, which is not such a bad thing overall. In terms of getting him, though, that's a whole other story. Because the Raptors don't really have the contracts in order to obtain him. So it's going to have to be a 3-4 team type of trade. And I don't think the Raptors are going to be giving up anything of value for him. Even going down the roster, even giving up like a guy like Norman Powell, that's not going to be happening. So none of the Raptors' top five or six guys will be in this trade, if it does happen.
Yeah, but I think the one thing you mentioned that was really important is Drummond's played on some franchises that, again, sorry, Peter, don't have the best track record. The coaching hasn't been the best. And his role, although maybe in Detroit could have been defined, he really hasn't had that stability. And I think coming to the Raptors could be a point where you could maximize a bit of his potential. And like you mentioned, he's athletically gifted. He has the right skill set. I do question his basketball IQ sometimes, kind of knowing how to make those winning plays, knowing how to make your team better or make those winning plays. I think he's been in the league long enough to at least show that he's capable of doing that. And I think that's something that's probably missing in his game. But you know what? If you're comparing Drummond with Alex Len and Aaron Baines' experiment, I think Drummond's a win. I think that he improves their interior defense. He gives them someone who's consistent on the glass. And again, the Raptors like to switch a lot on defense. So like you mentioned, he's agile. So I think it could be a good fit. Now getting him, like you mentioned, the salaries don't match up. But I do think the Raptors are willing to get rid of a few pieces, smaller players, and maybe throw in a second round pick for him, and maybe another team that's involved would be able to help match the salaries.
Has Andre Drummond ever played on a team where where he was the one dominant player in the paint? Because coming into the league, he was on Detroit. You obviously have him and Greg Monroe, which is like one of the worst ideas possible, putting Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond together. And then by the end of it, it's him and Blake. Right, goes to Cleveland for, at this point, less than a year. He was acquired at the deadline last year. And then he's got Kevin Love the whole time. And then Kevin Love gets injured this year. He gets a few good games of just being alone. And then, boom, here's Jared Allen to put with you. So, I don't know. I guess going to Toronto would actually, it'd be like the ideal move for the guy, right? Like, at most, you're having Pascal in the paint around you. That's not bad. At least Pascal is mobile and can actually like spread the floor a bit, unlike most of his other big men that's been around him.
Yeah, and the Raptors mostly have played five out, so having a guy that can actually roll the rim and finish will be a nice addition, I think. And I think that Drummond just needs a coach to show him what kind of salary he would make this upcoming offseason if he played really good defense and just focused on finishing at the rim instead of getting post-ups, getting mid-post touches, and just be like, if you do these things really well, you're going to make $15 to $20 million, or if not more, if you're like one of the better defensive players in the second half of the year. And if you just continue to do the things that you're currently doing and being a stat patter and a guy that shooting a ridiculous 2-point percentage from outside of, you know, 5 feet and taking way too many of those shots, then you're only going to make between, you know, 1 and 5 million next year. I think if somebody showed him that and put it into his head that in your prime, you're basically going to become like DeMarcus Cousins right now. And Drummond is not a guy who is going to make that money because of injuries. He's going to make it because he just doesn't have a clue right now. So if you get a coach to get him into that, you know, mind space, I guess, and just make him figure things out and see it from a coach's perspective, then I think it could work. But I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
You don't think Stan Van Gundy was good for him?
I mean, a lot of players in the past, including Shaq, have talked about what they think about Stan Van Gundy. I like Stan Van Gundy, to be honest, but, you know, a lot of players have said he hasn't been the right guy for them. So maybe if this does happen, maybe Nurse will be the guy. Or the other team that we haven't really talked about yet that I think is going to come up is Boston, because Boston has that massive exception. And he could definitely be a guy that you trade a couple second-round picks for and just get him into that exception and pay a bit more tax, a lot more tax, actually. But at least you get in a situation where, same sort of scenario, where you have like a really good defensive coach and good coach overall that will try to mold him into the player that he should be rather than the player that he currently is.
But then you'd have to send something back to Cleveland first, right?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think with the exception that they have, it's like something crazy, like 26 or 27 million from, you know, the Hayward deal. So I don't think they have to. Like, they can just acquire a guy like Harrison Barnes, you know, who they've been rumored to get without really having to give up anything besides a draft pick or two.
Yeah, I think the Boston fit definitely makes sense. And there's not that many trade destinations where teams would be willing to give up that much for Drummond. The issue is, again, matching his contract. So
did you just mute yourself?
yeah. That was
incredible.
Yeah. But no, I think there are some teams that would be interested in his service. Getting the contracts to work out would be the challenge. But again, Cleveland got him for pennies on the dollar. And I don't think they're expecting like a first round draft pick or a big quality player that's going to come out their way. They're really just looking to dump him for something, or they might end up as in a situation where they cut him.
They're not going to cut him, I don't think. I think he's going to get traded for sure. And if somehow he doesn't get traded, I think he's just going to sit out the rest of the year. Because at that point, they're not going to play him, obviously, since they're not playing him the next, little bit. What is it, next month and few days until the trade deadline? And I think ultimately, like, he's going to get traded to the Eastern Conference. Because just looking at the rosters down in the West, nobody really needs that type of center. Like, a team that he would make a lot of sense on based on their history and their need is Washington. I think Washington would probably give up, like, a first-round pick for him, too, just because it's Washington. And then a team like Charlotte, I think, makes a lot of sense, too, because they haven't had a good center in a long time. And they're trying to win right now. So I think that...
Put some respect on Bismack's name, man.
Cody Zeller, man. Cody Zeller.
Both of these guys. Come on, man. Yeah, you're right. Continue on.
Cody Zeller hasn't played 10 straight games, well, ever. But, yeah, I think Drummond makes a lot of sense in Charlotte especially. He would make them maybe a 5 seed in the Eastern Conference, and he'd make them a lot more interesting.
They're already one of like the funner teams to watch, too. Imagine that athleticism. Drummond getting lobs from LaMelo or Rozier. Or Devontae, if Terry Rozier or Devontae Graham ever pass the ball, that'd be incredible. Top 5 league pass team easily, if not top 3.
I think they have the type of salary to match Drummond's deal, too. If you send out both your centers and then maybe a couple guys off the bench, they could probably pretty easily get to 27 or 28 million, whatever Drummond's making. And it would make a ton of sense, too. And then you can play PJ Washington at the center, not off the bench, but when Drummond goes out of the game, play small ball a lot and play the same type of styles what they're playing right now, they can actually go back and forth between big ball and small ball, something they haven't really had the opportunity of doing this year.
I don't mind that. That's actually a good one. It's not like Charlotte's defense is anything to sing home about, right? They're sitting, 17th in defensive efficiency right now, so pretty middle of the pack. And I'm sure that, you know, if not for anything, Drummond can at least provide some strong rebounding, which, you know, they can always use. because we can't use a guy that's just going to eat up all the team's rebounds and not allow anyone else to grab them. Get that fast break going at least, right?
Yeah, with how fast they play too, like you mentioned, I think that he'd fit pretty well there. And again, you just take the post-ups out of his game, sort of like, you know, the Dwight Howard situation a few years ago. And he's a good passer, so they pass the ball more than anybody in the league, and I think he'd fit in pretty well there as long as he didn't try to go ISO mode like he has this year.
I mean, that's part of Andre Drummond's game. He's not going to let that go. Come on now.
We'll see.
Even in Detroit, he never let that go. He had Blake Griffin on his team handling the rock, and he refused to let that go. Come on now. Like, you can't unteach the kind of thing. But moving on, guys, there's another superstar. Well, I don't know. I don't know if I should call him a superstar, but former superstar. Former MVP candidate Blake Griffin has also being set by Detroit, and it looks like might be on the move, might be bought out soon. I mean, oh, okay, Raj, have you watched any Pistons games this year?
No, but I have seen some highlights from Jeremy Grant.
Okay, that's pretty much the exact answer I would expect from everyone that's not me. Because, I mean, guys, if you watch any of these Pistons games, Blake Griffin looks like he should be out there with a walker or something. Like, this guy literally cannot move. Like, picture what you have in your mind as Blake Griffin, that high flyer, that guy who can handle the rock like a point guard, basically Anthony Davis before Anthony Davis, and remove all that athleticism, because that's pretty much how he is now after all these injuries. And it really hurts to watch, man. I think he's averaging around 10, 12 points at most at this point in the season. He's sat a bunch of games due to injury already. So I don't even know, like, who would want that kind of player on their team? Who would want that contract on their team? Because I can't imagine anyone trading for a $32 or $35 million player that can barely move on the floor, right, Raj? Like, why would you even bother?
Yeah, the thing is the fact that he's on a big contract, and I think he has one more year after this. All I know is that Blake Griffin obviously is a shell of himself, but I think there will be a playoff team that will maybe look to acquire his services, but not at the current contract. And I don't think any team is going to give up a piece for Blake Griffin's massive contract. And I don't think Detroit's really going to be looking for anything in the realm of like $25, $30 million coming back their way. I think they're completely in rebuild, as they should be. And I won't be surprised if Blake ends up getting cut or part of his salary waived and he ends up joining a contending team. I still think he can be a serviceable NBA player, but I don't think we're going to ever expect All-Star Blake to ever come back with the condition his knees are in.
Josh, are you looking at his salary right now?
Yeah, 36 this year, 38 next year as a player option, which he's obviously going to pick up if, you know, he stays in this current situation. So.
Oh my God, 36.6 this year, and like next year he's basically making $39
million. Yeah.
This is incredible. This is just, oh my God, how could you? Wow. I mean, the guy's averaging 12.3 points, 5.2 rebounds, and 4 assists, shooting 36.5% from the field, 31% from the three. I mean, ugh.
He's basically, like, him and the team are basically stuck now, you would think, right? Because he's never going to agree to a buyout. Why would you agree to a buyout? Because you're never going to give up that player option. And why would you ever give back money in that situation? I know he wants to play basketball, and nobody's going to trade for that contract, you would think. Like, the team that if he was on an expiring contract, I really thought that, like, Boston would be the team that he would fit really well on, because they're in need of a guy that can play make as a big man and can play a little bit of center and bring all the stuff that he used to do. He can basically do everything on the floor when he was healthy anyway. So maybe this is a situation where he just sits out the rest of the year, and then who knows what happens next year. Maybe he gets traded next year once he picks up his option.
Yeah, but couldn't Detroit end up like cutting him and spreading his salary over the next 4 or 5 years?
Why would they do that?
Just so that they're at least not in a big hole next year with no player. Like, they can maybe look to build their team, sign some of their young players.
I mean, it's not a bad idea, but at this point, like, the team's already tanking, right? They're second last in the East already, so they're already in good standing, like quote unquote good standing to do well in the lottery. So even if you just tell Blake, like, hey, take a seat at home, just chill. Like, don't even bother coming into the office. Well, like, even with or without you, we're going to lose games. You know what I mean? There's no point in really spreading out his salary. Because even if they spread it out until the next year, next couple of years, I mean, they're not going to do anything with the roster space. The roster, like, that roster spot is just going to sit there empty anyways. I mean, I don't really see an advantage to it. Unless they can somehow, like, dump the salary as a whole, which would be incredible, because I don't see any team trading for that. Like, I know in the past we've said, but, you know, Russell Westbrook's salary is untradeable, John Wall's contract is untradeable. But this has to be, like, that one time where it's actually untradeable, right? Like, there's no team that would take this on.
I don't think he's tradable this year. I think he might be tradable next year when he's expiring contract. But in order to get rid of him this year, you'd have to trade multiple first-round picks. And again, with Detroit rebuilding, what's the point in doing that? You're better off just waiting it out and then being really bad the next 2 years with him on your books for the next, you know, year and a half or so. And then trying to use that money elsewhere next offseason.
Man, how the mighty have fallen with this guy. I don't even...
Did you call Detroit and the mighty?
I meant Blake. I meant Blake Griffin himself. How the mighty have fallen. But yes, also Detroit. 2004 NBA champions. Let's go.
Man, Detroit's like a slow-burning fire, man. Like, it's like Drummond and Blake. They're these two players that we're talking about. We're giving them way too much airtime.
There was one year where Detroit played Josh Smith, Greg Monroe, and Andre Drummond all at the same time.
And then the next year, they probably ended up getting Blake Griffin.
It was probably like 2 years after, yeah. But just, this Detroit team, man, so frustrating being a fan.
You think there's any chance that he gives up his player option next year?
No.
In order to get bought out this year to go to a contender? I mean, who gives up $38 million, right? But maybe? He's already made a lot of money.
No. The one team, the one time I could see it, is if you brought him back to LA somehow. But obviously the Clippers are out of the question because, one, they're never going to take him back. And two, he would never go back there. I think that relationship is absolutely severed. And then what the hell would the Lakers want him? You know? Yeah. Come on, man. Why would the Lakers ever want Blake Griffin at this point? They got AD and they got Montrez.
I'm just trying to find a way to free Blake because this might be better for him, honestly. He gets to rest for a year and a half, rest up his body. It'll be the first time he's not going to go into a situation where he has knee surgery in the offseason because he won't be playing. So maybe it's a good thing for him. Or, you know, maybe he'll just start practicing his comedy and retire.
Ha, ha, ha. What about Golden, man? If he went to Golden State, maybe?
No, they already have Wiseman. They don't want to disrupt his development. Obviously, Draymond, Clay, Wiggins, Steph. Like, they have their anticipated roster for 2021. And I don't think they're going to try to throw Blake in just to disrupt the process. And plus, they've already been paying like well into the luxury tax this year. I don't think they want to get further into it next.
Yeah, I guess. All right. Well, let's just move on because you're right, Raj. Blake Griffin has gotten way too much airtime with this. I want to move on to a new segment that we made up called Worried or Waiting, because, you know, it's that time of the year. You're about 27, 28 games into the season. And, you know, there's a lot of teams that are really underperforming what we expected out of them. And Josh, I want to talk with your supposed Eastern Conference champions for this upcoming year, the Boston Celtics, because, you know, they start off the year without Kemba. You know, there's going to be some hiccups. The guy's recovering from some injured knees. He's got old man knees. That's fine. The way Kemba plays, I mean, there's a lot of pressure that moves around on his joints. So it's understandable that he's hurt. You go into the season, you have Jaylen Brown just becoming an absolute animal this year, easily an all-star caliber player. And then you skip a couple of weeks, Jason Tatum gets COVID, goes down. And then somehow the Celtics luckily only played like two or three games while he was out because like most of their team was under COVID protocol. You move on a couple of weeks, Marcus Smart gets hurt just as Kemba comes back. And this team just can't ever seem to be healthy. And on top of all of that, if you ever looked at the Celtics roster, I guarantee you, you would not like any player after their sixth man at most. Like, this roster is absolute. I don't even know what to call it, man. They're young. They're inexperienced. They're not very good. They're small. I don't know, Josh. Like, what the hell, man? What kind of roster do you have here that's primarily based around, you know, guys that obviously you have the two stars of the wings, but after that, you're running Carson Edwards and Peyton Pritchard like 20 minutes a game.
Yeah, this is the one year where you actually needed some quality depth in order to get through the regular season, and Danny Ainge didn't really plan ahead with that in order to, you know, get like veterans for the roster that can actually play 15 to 20 minutes or longer than that in a pinch. Like, even guys like Jeff Green, for example, that can play 25 minutes for you, not completely kill you out there. But
that's my boy, Jeff Green.
He's played well this year. But, you know, in terms of Celtics, I made the prediction before the year. I thought they were going to be, like, a lower-seeded Eastern Conference team, which ultimately wouldn't matter. And here we are. And I think, ultimately, if they're healthy come playoff time, they're going to be completely fine. And I think that they really just need to make a move around the edges, especially on the bench. Because, you know, once Marcus Smart gets back, I think he's the biggest missing piece for them, obviously, because they don't play the same sort of tenacious defense, especially. And they don't move the ball as well with him out of the lineup. So I think once he gets back in a couple weeks, they'll be fine. But they do need to make a couple moves to get some veterans in there that can play 20 minutes a game for them, or even 15 minutes a game for them come playoff time. Because ultimately, the regular season doesn't matter. As long as they make the playoffs, they'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the Celtics either. I think Kemba coming back from his injury, it's just going to take him a bit more time to get settled in. And they're obviously missing Marcus Smart. I do think they will have to add another player, at least to their starting seven or eight. Someone who can, like Josh mentioned, give you 15, 20 minutes of solid, well-rounded play. I know Josh hates a lot on this guy, but I do think a player like Harrison Barnes would be a decent fit here. I also think, like, you're looking for a player who can play the four, but is not ball dominant, can space the floor. There aren't too many names that I can think of on the trade market, but I wouldn't be surprised if they get someone like that. And I think a player that would be perfect would be like a Danilo Gallinari or someone like that. Obviously, he's not going anywhere, but a player like that would be perfect for the Celtics.
I don't know, man. You guys are much more calm about this than I am. I'm genuinely worried about this team. Not only are they not, like, there's no depth, but I don't know, like, the areas that they're lacking, it just really hurts. Like, how is it that since Marcus Smart has been out, you're like, what, 3-9 or a 3-9, 3-10, 3-7 or something? Like, the roster is so dependent on Marcus Smart being not just the glue, but like one of those guys that just does everything for the team. And yo, Marcus Smart is not Jason Tatum. He's not Jaylen Brown. How is it that your roster depends so much on this dude to carry the team? I don't understand it. Like, what happens in the playoffs if, you know, like, if unfortunately he goes down with an ankle injury or something minor like that? Like, how are you so dependent on Marcus Smart, of all people, is what I'm trying to get at.
Well, I think Kemba's obviously easing his way back from his injury. Yes, I don't want to say they're reliant on Marcus Smart. They're not a deep team, but if you look at their top seven, well, let's say eight guys, when Marcus Smart and Kemba are full strength, they have Kemba, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and then they have some very good post players in Tristan Thompson. They have Grant Williams, who can play a variety of different positions. They also have Daniel Tice. And then after that, they have Jeff Teague, question mark, and even Robert Williams. So they're really just missing that one other backup wing player that can play behind Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to give them a bit more spark. And if you just count all those players in the playoffs, you really only need to go eight deep.
Yeah, I agree. It's mid-season. People overreact. It happens every year. I mean, they're not playing well right now, obviously. But, you know, in a month from now when they trade for whoever it's going to be, like Thaddeus Young, PJ Tucker, people are going to be looking at this team being like, okay, they got their five now, and they have two other guys off the bench that you can really count on. And I don't think the roster is that far away. Like, they just need to make their move around the edges. Maybe get a guy like JJ Redick just to have some shooting off the bench. You're not going to have to give up much for him either. So they're not going to have to give up many of their main players to get what they need. They're not that far away.
Yeah, I do like the... Instead of Danilo Gallinari, I think Thaddeus Young would be perfect on this team.
I'm not buying it, man. There's something with this. Something just seems too off. Like, ideally, you could see Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum carrying a lot of the load, right? But dude, you're going to be relying on Daniel Theis to cover Joel Embiid or Tristan Thompson. Come on. How is this not troubling?
You can pick up a big center for not much at the trade deadline, too.
But no. So what you've told me is that you want them to get JJ Redick, Thaddeus Young, and a big center at the deadline. Come on, man.
All the moves are attainable. Big centers, you don't have to trade much for. Maybe a second-round pick, Thaddeus Young.
But you know Danny Ainge is not going to do that. That's the worst part. Danny Ainge is going to hoard draft picks more than he gives away. This guy loves draft picks more than anything else in the world. So why would he ever do that kind of thing? I can't even see him trading away the freaking like Peyton Pritchard for a good player at this point, let alone a draft pick.
I just want to point out, even if they don't trade for a big center, Boston's destroyed Philadelphia the last couple of years regardless. They can just play quick against a guy like Joel and they'll be fine.
And they also that was when Joel was young, man. That was pre-Doc Joel.
They destroyed him last year, too.
Pre-Doc.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What? All they need Doc, to do is Doc with Tobias Harris and Joel? That's an animal.
No, because as soon as they go up 3-1, they're going to choke. But in all seriousness, they have enough bodies, not to stop Joel, but just to like slow him down a bit. Like they have Tristan Thompson, Daniel Theis, even Robert Williams. Like they have three guys that if you want them to at least get in the way, like they're players that won't play like 30, 40 minutes and shut down Embiid like Gasol did a couple of years ago, but it's going to be more like, you know what, pick up your 3-4 fouls, make sure Embiid goes shooting 35-40% and get in his way, get in his head. And I really do think that Boston's in an okay position. I do think they need to make one move, though, not three. Josh is just getting a bit carried away.
Let me put it this way. Which five in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference do you trust more than Kemba Walker, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and who am I missing here? Daniel Theis.
I don't know. I'm trusting Philly way above them. I'm trusting Miami over them.
Philly? After last?
I'm not trusting Kemba. Why do you trust Kemba?
Kemba as a third guy is pretty damn good, and I think over the course of the season he's only going to get better.
I don't know, man. Kemba doesn't look nearly as explosive. Kemba went like 1-for-22 on mid-range twos at an early point in the season. I don't trust it.
Which means he can only go up.
No, it doesn't.
Hey, we talked about this with Luka Doncic, too. He started the season shooting 9% from three, and now he's shooting a career-high 33%, which is not very good, but it's trending upwards.
Wait. Did you say a career-high 33?
Correct. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, that's awful.
Hey, the man's getting better.
That's a lot worse than I thought it was. Oh man, can we just move straight into Dallas right now? That is disgusting.
Yeah, let's talk about Dallas.
Oh my goodness, the Mavericks. I mean, where do I begin? Do I start with Rick Carlisle coming up with some funky ass schemes? Do I start with Jason Richardson yelling at Porzingis for not making defensive rotations? Because this team is, you know, one of those teams we thought was going to come into the league firing this year. We thought Luka Doncic was going to be an MVP candidate. And they started off hella slow. I mean, their last 10 has been decent. They've been 5-5. They're almost at 500. But, they're sitting in the 10th seed right now at 13-15. The team has gotten better. I mean, the offense is really flowing with Porzingis there. But defensively, this team just looks awful. Raj, man, like, how do you fix this?
I told you so.
They just overperformed last year. Again, I think they're playing really at their talent level right now. If you look at their squad, Rick Carlisle is an excellent coach. I think he's doing the best given the roster he has. Losing Seth Curry has affected their shooting and their spacing. And I think teams are just letting Luka kind of score his buckets, but not letting him get others involved. And ultimately, I think Dallas is probably right where they should be. I think, if you put some of these players on other teams, they wouldn't be starting in the NBA. But because they're on the Dallas Mavericks, I don't think they automatically get a free pass. And I personally think Dallas is going to be a fringe playoff team this year. Luka's obviously been playing better lately, but they don't really have as much athleticism. That's the key. They don't have players that can win those one-on-one battles. And I mentioned that before. And without having those players, I think they're going to lose out in a lot of situations. And again, I think they're probably the worst team in Texas.
Okay, that's just categorically wrong. Because Houston's definitely going to be worse, especially now that Christian Wood's out. But Dallas's biggest problem this year has been Porzingis at center. Teams just attack him relentlessly. And, you know, as Kleba gets back into the fold and gets his legs back, he'll be able to help with that a little bit with, you know, help side defense and play at the rim, like blocks at the rim. But right now he just looks sluggish. He doesn't look athletic anymore. And he's not one of the more athletic big guys in the NBA, but he can really move for his size. And Porzingis, however, is not that. He doesn't look as mobile as he did last year. And just, you know, his lateral movement just hasn't been good the entire season. And then you watch a game yesterday where Lillard just does whatever he wants to do because, you know, Porzingis isn't providing the correct type of help that he needs to do. And the guards can't catch up. Like, as good as you are on the wing at times with Richardson and Dorian Finney-Smith, you would think that they'd be pretty solid there. But if they're getting picked off every time and Porzingis doesn't know what he's doing or just can't recover in time, then they're going to struggle big time, which is what's happened so far. Like, offensively, they're totally fine. It's just defensively, teams just relentlessly attack that guy. And you have to play him 35 minutes a game because he's your second best player. But if he's playing that amount of time and he can't move that well, then you're going to have the record that you do.
Yeah, he is. Remember when KP came into the league and he was just a defensive juggernaut in New York? Like, we saw all those athletic plays, blocks from the weak side, like nobody's business. And then what was his injury over the past couple of years?
Well, he had the knee injury.
It was his knees?
He tore some meniscus, I believe.
Oof. That's rough, man. Because, we've all said it. Like, they're really just tearing that guy apart whenever teams attack him, right? But the funny thing is that their offense right now, they're eighth in offensive efficiency at 111. Man, that's pretty damn good. But their defense is just waning as we've all pushed towards it. But 27th in defensive efficiency is just not going to cut it for, you know, a team that, I wouldn't say had title aspirations, but they obviously had like playoff aspirations. They were supposed to be one of the better teams. One of the teams that improved, right?
Yeah, but again, I think they overshot last year. And again, not to hammer home the point, but if you went through Dallas's roster and looked at just like from a purely athletic point of view, you'd be like, these players don't have the athleticism to be starting caliber players in the NBA. They're kind of like a team that's super well coached. They know their plays. They know their drills. They have good players, good skill, but just the athleticism isn't there. And when they go up against consistently athletic teams that can play and figure out how they play, they're going to probably lose because the difference in athleticism is a lot. And we talked about Kleber or Porzingis, but I think there's other players too that are just like a step slower. They're not as explosive. They're not winning the one-on-one battles. And again, I think they're going to be a fringe playoff team. That's, I think, what their roster is really equivalent to.
Yeah, they're another team that needs a major upgrade. But I don't think that they're in a position to really do that this year. I think that they really have to look at the team in the offseason and decide which way they want to go and how they really want to build around Luka, you know, long term. Because they're going to have him for the next, you know, at least, what, 6 years. So you would hope that they pick their direction sooner rather than later. And that's really going to involve what they do with Kristaps going forward.
Man, that's a damn shame. They could really use a player like Jay Crowder, right, Raj?
Of course, anyone could use Jay Crowder.
It's okay, Josh. It's okay to admit it, man. He's a good role player.
He's like, all again, right. He's not as good as you guys say, though.
Yeah, he's still Jeff Green, like, but he's all right.
a player that could like just instantly help them. And again, Dorie Finney-Smith has been good this year, and like, nothing against him, but just the player, another player like Royce O'Neal, a player that can really kind of just provide spacing, good defense, is not ball dominant, but can hit his shots, rebound the ball well, can switch. They just need like a really versatile wing or four.
You're basically describing Finney-Smith from last year, because if he shot the ball better this year, he'd be totally fine, but he's shooting like 33% after the last game, I think. And early in the year, he's shooting like 27%. And Dallas has really gone from like 26th to, what do you say, 7th in offensive efficiency in the last like 6 games?
Yeah, but...
So, I think it's only going to go up, but defensively, that's where they need to make improvements.
Yeah, I also think like Jason Richardson's actually been a bit of a disappointment. Like, I think they expected him to play... Sorry.
I like how you both have called him Jason this podcast.
I didn't even talk about him.
You called him Jason earlier.
I don't think so.
Gosh.
You'll see. When you edit this podcast, you'll see.
I meant Jason Capone on this team.
But Jason.
Oh, you did it again.
Oh my God. Josh Richardson. Yeah. You got it in my head right now. But yeah, Josh Richardson has been a bit of a disappointment. I think they expected a little better play. He obviously had an off year when he was in Philly, and he wasn't going to put up the same numbers he did in Miami, but they expected him to be a bit better shooting the ball, a bit better defensively, and he's averaging like somewhere probably around 11 points a game, but some games he puts up like 15 and some games he puts up 6 points, and I would know because I have him on fantasy.
He might just be one of those guys that's not quite good enough to be like your secondary or third ball handler, but also isn't quite as good to be able to be like a spot-up shooter that he's in the role right now, like to where he maybe handles a ball like, you know, 12% of your possessions, which isn't much at all, and then he's basically used this guy in the wing.
Who's hanging around with a truck backing up all the time here?
Sorry.
This guy's just chilling in a warehouse, eh?
He's using the microwave. Sorry about that.
It's okay, man. I just had to poke fun. It's not every day I get to talk to somebody sitting in a warehouse with a forklift. All right, let's move on, guys. I want to hit Miami real quick because, I mean, this team was very, very shaky coming into the season. And we all expected them to be tired, similar to how we expected LA to be tired after running into, you know, Thanksgiving, having about a month and a half off at most. And Miami, unlike LA, just did not show up at the beginning. Butler got COVID at one point. More than half the team was like sitting during COVID protocol, right? Like we were seeing Kezia Opala and Max Strus get a lot of minutes, and you know, low key, somehow Max Strus has snuck his way into the actual rotation, which is hilarious to me. But, you know, good for him. And they're kind of on the up and up. I mean, Bam Adebayo is continuing his stellar play this year. That guy might be one of the best like mid-range shooters at this point, except I was going to say similar to LaMarcus Aldridge, except significantly more, you know, athletic and fun to watch. But, I mean... this team is on the up and up. Raj, you asked about it like a couple of weeks ago. Can we really start judging Miami? And I think now we can, now that Dragic is pretty much the only injured player on the team, right, Josh? Butler is back. Tyler Hero seems to be back from whatever weird neck injury he had. And, I mean, they've been flowing. That's all I can really say. They're flowing right now.
Yeah, like I think that they're not... even though when they were going into the playoffs last year, no one expected them to make a finals run, I think they were playing better basketball last year than they were this year. And I think that's because their team was just more well-rounded. At that point, they had obviously less injuries, and They were just playing fundamentally better basketball. But again, this roster has enough talent. It's well constructed. You have to give Pat Riley lots of credit for that. And I'm not worried about the Heat. When you look at how they stack up against the other teams in the East, I think they do very well. And I think maybe one thing that they could do is add just another wing defender, someone who can possibly guard Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. So I think, honestly, that I'm not worried. I think getting an extra body, which will definitely be available and probably on the cheap, would help them, but nothing else.
I'm one of the non-believers in what they did last year. So I don't think they're as good as what they showed last year. They had an incredible shooting streak in the bubble. And this year, you know, they've had COVID-related. Like, I see Miami sort of like I see Dallas from the West. They've had a lot of COVID-related, you know, issues throughout the season, injuries, etc. I think they have a better overall roster than Dallas, obviously. And they match up really well with certain teams in the Eastern Conference. It really depends what kind of matchups they get come playoff time. Throughout the course of the regular season, they'll be totally fine. They're going to be like a 4 or 5 seed. But, you know, come playoff time, I don't think they have enough to come out of the East. I think there's a chance they might make the conference finals. But ultimately, I think they're going to be a second round and out team this year.
I would love for them to pick up PJ Tucker. I think that could be a great fit. Just add a bit of toughness. Obviously, after Bam, I think there's a few question marks of who they can play at center. But having PJ Tucker there is probably a piece they could pick up, and it probably can get him for a reasonable price if Houston's on the seller's market.
Did you say that after Bam, they don't have any centers, so your solution is to pick up PJ Tucker?
I'm not saying they have to play him at center, but Bam can sometimes play the 4, but most of the time he's going to be playing the 5, and just having another body that's a 4 or 5, I think it would be great.
PJ Tucker is one of the only guys that can really move the needle for a team come trade deadline time, I think. Even like a guy like Thaddeus Young, he's not going to move the needle that much. Like he'll fit in like a 20 to 25 minute role. But PJ Tucker is one of those guys you can play for 40 minutes in a playoff game. And even if he only puts up like 5 points, he's going to really affect the game. So, and what's wrong with playing him at center? He played great at center.
No, he doesn't. He's still undersized.
He's undersized, but if you play him in Miami, where Bam is playing 35 minutes at center, and you play PJ Tucker only 10 to 15 minutes at center, that's a lot better than playing PJ Tucker center the entire game for 40 minutes, right? That's what Rogers, I think he's trying to say, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're matching him up against like backup bigs or smaller bigs, then sure. But I mean,
you just don't want to kill the guy. Like, you don't want to play him 25 plus minutes against Joel Embiid. But if he's playing center against the Raptors, then you're fine.
Well, the Raptors aren't going to match up with the Heat in the playoffs. They're good. the numbers don't add up here.
The idea is, if Miami, their big question mark is who's in their front court. Like, obviously, you have Bam, who's an all-star. And then behind Bam, it's really slim pickings. Like, you have, obviously, Precious, who's a rookie. But then you have, Kelly Olynyk?
Let's just get to the root of the problem here. We've already talked about it. They haven't replaced Jay Crowder. Yes, Jay Crowder fit well last year. And no, they have not replaced him at all. It's true. Like, you know, they signed Myers Leonard to a $10 million contract so they can trade him.
Stupid.
That was the only reason why he got that money. And now he's out for the rest of the year, but they can use him as a trade chip in a trade at least. But yeah, I think PJ Tucker would make a lot of sense for them because then you replace, you know, the shooting four that you had with Crowder, who can also defend at times against certain matchups, with a guy who's much better at that type of role. So PJ Tucker's going to get traded, just a matter of to what team. I think he'd fit well anywhere, obviously. I really hope that he ends up on the Nuggets, though.
Yeah, me too. Screw your Heat, Raj. Let's get him to the Nuggets.
No, I don't think the Nuggets are willing to give up anything for him.
They don't need to.
His contract isn't really that big.
He's making $10 million, I think. So if you trade a couple second-round picks and whatever salary to match that, I think Houston would be happy with that.
Yeah, send Isaiah Hartenstein back to Houston.
I think the major thing is PJ Tucker is going to prefer to go to Miami.
That doesn't matter what he prefers, bro.
Yeah, who the hell cares what PJ Tucker thinks?
Who cares what players want? I'm tired of this. Forget player empowerment. I'm over it. Trade asset.
They got some guys in that team that can, you know, not really affect, you know, the playoff picture overall besides PJ Tucker, but they got some guys that can, like, play spot minutes at least for some team. Like, Sterling Brown's a decent player. And I think that, you know, you put him on a team like, you know, Boston or a team that needs a wing that can play some good defense and shoot a little bit, he fit well.
Yeah, so I was going to say Sterling Brown on Boston would be sweet. Going back to Miami real quick before we wrap up. Raj, you're not worried about this team? You think they're going to pull it together?
I don't think they're going to come out of the East, but I think they're going to be a team that's going to make at least the second round. Depending on the matchup, they're going to probably push it to 6 or 7 games. And again, I'm not worried about them underperforming. I think last year was, like Josh mentioned, all the stars lined up. They were just playing lights out basketball. But this year, they're going to be another good playoff team. And if they make the right move, they could possibly end up in the finals again. And I'm not worried about their performance, even though they're starting off very slow.
All right, I'll buy it. I'm in on Miami being a second round team and nothing else. Probably getting Josh, I think you said like the 5 to 6 seed in the East.
Yeah, 4 or 5, I think. Like, they're the one team that has to trade for a starting four or else they're screwed, I think.
Yeah. They miss Derek Jones Jr. is who they really miss, not just Jay Crowder.
Yeah, Derek Jones Jr. played like 10 minutes in the playoffs.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think we can wrap it up here, guys. You guys got anything else to add?
Are the New York Knicks going to make the playoffs? Call it now.
Ooh.
Yes.
I guess we're not going to hold on. But actual playoffs, right? Not this bullshit play-in tournament, like the actual playoffs?
Maybe we'll just say top 8 seed. We'll take top 8 seed.
You know what? I think they will get top 8.
I don't think so.
I'm sort of coming around. I'm going to be honest. Like, Derrick Rose's addition, their bench actually looks pretty decent right now. And Thibodeau gets them playing hard. Like, playing hard every night in the regular season is the most important thing to make the playoffs, especially for less talented teams. So, but the problem is, if they have any type of injury, they're screwed. Like, really screwed.
If the standings stay the way they are, between 5 to 8, you have Boston, Charlotte, New York, Toronto, and Miami is sitting at 9. Atlanta sitting at 9, also 9, or tied with Miami for 9-10. So you think that the Knicks are going to end up with a better record than the Heat or the Hawks? Or they're better than the Raptors right now, but still. Than any of those teams or the Hornets? I don't know, man.
It might just come down to injury luck, to be honest. Like, they've been pretty lucky so far this season, besides now losing Mitchell Robinson, which might really affect them. But, you know, Nerlens can do a decent job in his wake.
Yeah, I think the fact that they play hard night in and night out gives them an edge over some of the other teams. Some of the other teams take nights off and rest their players and whatnot. I think Thibodeau gets them playing, like, 40 minutes a game, so I think they're going to make the playoffs. The New York Knicks.
Does Julius Randle continue to play this well if he makes the All-Star team after the All-Star break?
Is he in a contract year?
I think he has 1 year left.
I think so, too. I don't see why he wouldn't continue the trend. I mean, he's really young. He's only in the 6th year, dude. Come on. I don't know if we should write the guy off just because he makes an All-Star team. Like, I don't think his drive would drop that right after that.
I don't know. This year has sort of been an outlier for him, that he's playing like really good basketball on both sides of the ball, right? Like, he didn't really show that. He never really put it together the last couple of years, especially with his passing and his defense.
Maybe it's a lack of fans.
I mean, that's been a huge conversation the entire season, with all these teams shooting ridiculous percentages and offense is going way up and defense is going way down. So you might be right.
Yeah, it could just be that, you know, he's one of those, like a lot of other like, I don't want to say role players, but lesser top tier players. You know, some guys just thrive with less people around. Some guys just don't do well with too many crowds.
New York has the lowest team salary in the entire NBA. That's pretty shocking. Usually they're the highest, you know, because New York always wastes money on these guys that are like making insane amounts. Like, over the course of the past 20 years, like Stephon Marbury, Steve Francis, Zach Randolph, Eddie Curry, and now they're at 30, and they have tons of cap space this offseason.
Yo, during the offseason, we got to get Daryl back on and just do like a New York Knicks history pod, like over the past 30 years history. You know? Well,
to celebrate them making the playoffs.
Yeah, with like their one playoff run. I can't. I like this idea. All right, well, that's all the time we got for this week, guys. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. Leave those comments. Leave those 5 stars. You know what it is. We're on all the major podcast platforms, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, all the majors, and Instagram and Twitter at Hoops Corner Pod. And until next time, peace.